Okay, so today's daf is officially daf vav, Maseches Chagiga. We have a little bit of extra ground to cover. Public service announcement. Now this year, not only are being distributed via the WhatsApp group, but now they're also on yutorah.org for anyone who wants to listen. So we are about little more than 20 lines up on daf Hey Amud Beis. We had just mentioned that not only men cry, but God cries as well. Where does he cry? He usually cries in an inner chamber, but when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, he cries publicly, just like the Malachi Shalom cry publicly. So once we mention that God cries, we quote another pasuk about crying. So the pasuk says, "V'dama tidma v'tered eini dima ki nishba eder Hashem." That God cries a tear, he uses the Lashon dima twice, and then it says also when his eye sheds a tear, that's the third mention of a tear, because his flock, essentially the Jewish people, have been taken captive. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Shalosh Dima'os Halalu, these three tears, Lema. Why did God cry three tears? So says the Gemara, Achas Al Mikdash Rishon, one for the first Beis HaMikdash when it was destroyed, V'achas Al Mikdash Sheni, V'achas, and the third one, Al Yisrael Shegalu Mimkoman, and the fact that we were exiled from our place. V'kida Amri, and some say the third one was Achas Al Bitul Torah. It was maybe the fact that we nullified our Torah learning. So says the Gemara, Bishlam Alamanda Amar Al Yisrael Shegalu. If you say the third tier is the fact that we were exiled from our place, that makes sense with the pasuk, because Hayo Dichsev Ki Nishba Eder Hashem. That the reason why God is crying is because we were taken captive. Taken captive means we're no longer in our place. That makes sense. Alamanda Amar Al Bitul Torah. If you're telling me that God cried because we nullified our Torah learning, then my kinish ba'idr Hashem. What does that have to do with the fact that we were taken captive? So the Gemara answers, kivan shegalu Yisrael mim koman, once the Jews were exiled, ein lecha bitul Torah gadol mizeh. We think of bitul Torah as just, I'm not learning, but we know from our own lives that when we're not in our exact place, we won't have our routine, we're not comfortable with our community, the person who's teaching, that itself can be a bit of Torah. So the Jews were used to a certain structure of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Karbanos, of the Kohanim, and when that structure was taken away, so that itself, the fact that they were exiled, itself created a level of Bittul Torah. Tanur Rabbanan, Shlosha Kadosh Baruch Hu Bocha Alein B'chol Yom. There are three individuals that God cries for every single day. Essentially, he's upset with how they turned out. And who are those individuals? Al she'efsher lasuk b'torah ve'ino osik. Number one is someone who has the capacity to learn Torah and doesn't. Number two, v'al she'efsher lasuk b'torah ve'osik. Someone who does have the capacity, someone who does not have the capacity and yet does. Number three, v'al parnes hamizga'al atzibor. Someone who's appointed to a prominent position and uses that position for his own agenda. And this is really a problem or a pitfall with Jewish leadership, that sometimes you get to a prominent position and now you have all this power and that comes with a little bit of ego. And the question is, how does one use that?
I didn't know that lasso Torah means to study Torah. I thought it meant just to be involved in Torah and mitzvahs.
Okay.
The way you explained it was it's Torah study. It also says it in English.
Right. I mean, when we say the bracha in the morning, Torah, again, lav dafka specifically Torah study, but to be involved in Torah and mitzvot as well. I mean, does anyone have a question on the second category here? But it's not, because, I mean, that would be a possibility, but it sounds like it's the same type of tier for all. It doesn't say second category is a different type of tier. So, think about the second category here. The guy is EFSHAR. He can't do it, but he chooses to anyway. That sounds like a really good person. That sounds like someone who's trying to overcome his lack of ability. We would generally commend such a person. So, what does this mean? So, I'll offer you three explanations. I'll give you the most simple one first. It says, but the Ian Yaakov says this. He says that a little bit of David was saying, when you say the word asak, it doesn't just refer to limud haTorah, it refers to yigiyah baTorah. It refers to in-depth learning, not surface learning, in-depth learning. So, you could really read the first two categories the same way. Number one is someone who's efshar lasok ve'eno osek. It doesn't mean you can learn and you're not learning. It means that you, when everything else in your life, you strive for the best. and you went to this college, this graduate school, you're a very smart guy. But for some reason, Limud Torah, you settle for a very low level shiur, you just read the art scroll. But if you can handle more, then God says, I'm crying over you. I gave you a certain faculty, capacity, you're not living up to what I provided you with. And so similarly, number two, think about number two. You have a guy who, he's not the smartest guy. He doesn't have the greatest capacity. So for him, the best type of learning would be a simple learning, Mishnayos, Gemara, Daf Yomi. And if he's going to try, his learning is going to be, I'm going to go to the Rosh Yeshiva's Ion Shir, Pilpul Shir. So God says, that's also not what I want from you. Meaning someone who's EF Shar Lasuk Batorah, his tachlis is not to do the in-depth Ion Shir. But he chooses to do that anyway because whether he's trying to impress people or he thinks that he's going to look better that way, that's also not, a person has to realize the capacity that God gave him and choose his learning according to that. Not everyone's meant to do the same type and the same amount of learning. That's the Ian Yaakov. The Marsha says something else. He says, if you'll note, that it doesn't say Lasik Batorah Ve'ena Osik Batorah. It just, the last word is Usak. So it leaves that a little vague as to what the Usak is referring to. So the Marsha says like this for the second category. A guy is EF Shar Lasuk Batorah. Why? Because he has a parnasa. He's a lawyer, he's a doctor, he's an accountant, name your other Jewish jobs, and he doesn't have the time to learn. And that's okay. And nevertheless, Usak doesn't mean in Torah. It means with his parnasa. So what does that mean? The Marsha says, even when you don't have time, that's not an excuse for life. Meaning a person can always say, I don't have time. But if that is his reality, the Usak, and he maintains and chooses to keep that reality for his entire life, God cries over such a person. Of course, there are situations where we have, okay, don't have time, we have to do this and that. But obviously, if God put us in this world and there's a Torah to be learned, we have to realize that we have to do our best to find that time. And obviously, in months and years, that amount and time will change, but to always be in our radar, look for that time. And someone who just says, I'm Asak in my Parnasa. So it's true. In terms of the hours, he's actually not available. But the fact that he's choosing that for his entire life is something that God cries over. On the flip side, one of the Farshim, the Pirkei Kahuna, is almost the exact opposite. He says that EF Shar Lasuk Batorah is a person who is trying his best to make a Parnasa, taking two jobs, and he literally doesn't have time. He's working from 7 in the morning to 9 at night, he goes to sleep right away, he wakes up, goes to Shacharis, goes back to work. And the Usak means that he forgoes his Parnasa to go learn. So EF Shar Lasuk means he couldn't learn because he has to make a Parnasa. He says, you know what? God will provide for my family. I'll sit in Kolel. He says, that person also God cries over. Because a person who just casually, naively, just goes and says, I'll learn Torah and whatever will happen, there has to be a balance because we know the Mishnah Avos says, in Kemach in Torah, you can't have Torah without Derech Eretz. And a person who thinks he's going to go learn all day and the Parnas thing will just solve itself, that God says, that's also not how I created the world. After Adam Arishon, we have to strike a balance. It's almost the opposite of the Marsha. A person can't get too carried away and say, my Parnas is it, and I guess I don't have time. But a person also can't say, I'll learn and whatever happens, happens. Right? We have to sort of strike a balance, and that's sort of what this second category is. A person who takes the extreme one way or the other, it could be that God is crying over such a person. So the Gemara continues. Rebbe Havi Nukit Sefer Kinnos.
So what does the third have to do with the first two?
A partner Thomas Galab Tzibor. It sounds like he's not using his kochos properly. The first two categories are people that they didn't, whatever they were given, they didn't utilize it the way they should have been utilizing it. So a person who reaches a high position, he has an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And he's going to use that for his own agenda. Also, he's misusing something that was given to him.
Or maybe it's the other way. Maybe God feels really bad to be a, you ask your father, the president of a shul, it's not, It's not a really good, you feel sorry for the guy, gets abuse.
But here we're saying that he's misgoel at Tzibor. We're saying that it's true, but here he's not, it's very clear the case is that he's not using it properly. So Rebbe having Nokit Sefer Kinos, because Kari Begava. So Rebbe was reading Sefer Kinos. What's Sefer Kinos? That's Echa. Right, we say it on Tisha B'Av. So Kinos and Echa. So Kimatol Haipsuka, Hishlich Mishamayim Aretz, that God, essentially just describing how quickly he cast us away from him, he says he sent us from the heavens to the earth. Nafal min yadeh. The Sefer, the Echa, literally fell out of his hands. The Marsha says, this was almost like a coincidence, that as he read the pasuk of something falling, his Sefer fell. And Amar, and he proclaimed, exclaimed, Mi'igra Ram Labira Amikta. Meaning, that's literally the farthest distance in the world, from the heavens to the earth. And the fact that God sent us away like that, that's a steep fall. So he was lamenting the fact that that's how far we fell. Rebbe v'Rebchia, Havi Shakli v'Azle v'Orcha, they were walking together. Kimatu lahuma. So when they got to a certain city, Amri, they said to the gatekeeper of the city, Ikatsurva mirabanan hacha? Is there a prominent rabbi here? Nezel v'nikbalape. We want to go greet him. We want to talk and learning with him. We want to, enjoy his company. So Amri, they said, Ikatsurva mirabanan hacha? There is one. Umeore naimhu. Right? This is a nice way of saying he's blind. So Amr le Rebchia le Rebbe. So Rebchia says to Rebbe, Tivat, you stay here. Lo tizalzel benis yuscha. Right? You, Rebbe, you're the Rosh Hashiva. You want to come with me to meet the blind rabbi? Why don't you just stay here? I'll report back what we spoke about. So Izlana viakbalape. I'll go, I'll greet him, and I'll come back, and it will all be good. Tukfe v'azubade. Rebbe did not accept this. He grabbed Rebchia by the jacket, and he said, no, I'm going with you. So Kiavi Mithru Mine, they met with this blind rabbi. When they were leaving, the blind rabbi gave them a bracha. Amaluhu, Atem Hikvaltem Panim Hanirim Vinoroin. You came to greet a rabbi that can be seen but cannot see. He's blind. So Tiski, you should have a bracha. Lahakvil Panim Haroim Vinonirin. Right? Though that who can see but not be seen, which is God. There's a nice bracha. So Amar Lei, so Rebbe says to Rebchia, Icho Hashta Menasim Habir Chasa. If I would have listened to your advice, I would have lost out on that bracha. Meaning, I'm happy that I didn't listen to you when you told me to stay back. So Amru Lei, so Rebchia says to Rebbe, Miman Shamilacha. Where did you get the understanding that it was so important to go greet a Rav? Meaning, I told you to stay, you protested. So the fact that you protested shows you clearly value going to greet Talmidei Chachamim. Where did you get that value? Where did you learn that from? So he answered, Mi Pirkei d'Rabbi Yaakov Shamili, from my Rebbe Rabbi Yaakov. D'Rabbi Yaakov ish kfar chatya, have mekabel api d'Rabbe kol yoma. Rabbi Yaakov himself would go greet his Rebbe every single day. Not only that, Kikash, when he got older, Amar lei lo nitzdaramar, you don't have to go anymore. Lo yachalma, you're not able to. It's hard for you to walk, hard for you to get there. Amar lei Rabbi Yaakov said, Mi zutar, is it so insignificant? Ma'idich sibuhu b'rabbanon, that which it says with respect to the Rabbanon. Now this is a pasuk in Tehillim, which says, Vayechi od la netzach lo yirah hashachas, ki yirah chacham yamusu. Now, Tosfos on the bottom points out that the simple interpretation of this pasuk is lashon bitmiya. It's basically describing how foolish the Rishayim are. It's saying, Vayechi od la netzach. The Rishon think they're going to live forever. Well, Yirah HaShachas, they're never going to experience a downfall. But we're interpreting it differently in this drasha. We're saying, Vayechi od lanetzach, ki lo Yirah HaShachas. You know the way to live eternally? You know the way to get life? It's ki Yirah HaChamim Yamusu. When you see deceased Talmid Chamim, it might be a source of going to Kfarim, that we get Chiyas from that. There's lanetzach, there's an everlasting, Chiyas that we get from going to visit Talmid Chacham when they're not alive. So Rabbi Yaakov said like this, Uma haroach chachamim b'misasan yichyeh. If going to visit a Talmid Chacham when he's deceased, he can't speak with you. If that will give you chiyas, b'chayeh and alachas kam v'kama. So going on a trip to meet Gedolim, all the more so that will be a meaningful experience. That's why Rabbi Yaakov himself valued going to visit Talmid Chachamim so much. Ravidi Avud Rav Yaakov Bar Idi, Have Ragil Davi Azil Tzlasa Yarche Ba'orcha, the Chag Yoma Bebe Rav. So he had to make Parnasa. So he would travel to make Parnasa he was accustomed to doing that for about 3 months at a time. And then he would have one day to go to yeshiva to learn. Then he was back out to make more Parnasa. So b'havik karli rabbanon, they would call him bar beirav dechad yoma, the one day yeshiva student. I'm sure we know many yeshiva students back in the day that are like that, right? We try not to be called that, but he was the one, everyone knew. He would come in for one day, you wouldn't see him for 3 months. Cholish daite. That nickname did not make him too happy. Kari anafshe, he said about himself, a pasuk in Iov, schuk lire'eyu ehya. I'm like the laughing stock of my friends. They're calling me the one day yeshiva guy. I don't want to be called that. I'm doing my best. So Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan said, "B'matusaminach, please, lo sa'anish lu rabbanan." Meaning, he understood that this, the fact that they were calling him this nickname was a very bad thing. He didn't want any curse to be upon the rabbanan for the fact that Rabbi Yaakov Aridi would get mad at them, would curse them. So therefore, to appease or to amend this error, nafik Rabbi Yochanan l'dei midrasha v'darash. He had to sort of recalibrate the minds of those who made fun of him. So he quoted the following pasuk. Now this is a pasuk in Yeshayahu which says, "V'osi yom yom yidrishun v'daas darki yachbatsun." Right, you will seek me out by day, and you'll try to search for my ways. So the fact that it says yom yidrishun, you'll try to search me out and try to seek me by day. The Gemara asks, "V'chi bayom dorshin oso." Ubalayla in Darshanoso, so once it's Shkia, all of a sudden my all bets are off. No. El Lomar Lacha says Rabbi Yochanan. You know why it says Yom? Because Kola Osik Batora Afilu Yom Echad Bashana. You learn Torah one day a year, Malala Vakasuv Ki Asa Kola Shana Kula. Right? And that's what it means. Yom Yom Yidushan. You seek me for one day, I'll view it as if you sought me the whole year. And that's why he tried to explain Yaakov Aridi, even though he was basically the one day yeshiva student, that one day is significant. Because a person learns one day, it's like he learns the whole year. He said similarly on the flip side, in the negative, it's also true. V'chei b'midas puranos, d'chsiv, b'mispar hayav mashar tartem es ha'aretz. So God says, because the meraglim, they did bad things, they spied at the land for a certain amount of days, therefore, I put you in the midbar for what? For 40 years. So the Gemara says, that math doesn't line up. Did the meraglim sin for 40 years, and therefore, they were punished for 40 years? No. They were spying the land for 40 days. So what does it mean? The God says, I gave you exactly what you did to me. You spied for 40 days, so I put you in the midbar for 40 years. He says, no, El Lomar Lecha, Kala Over Avera Afilu Yom Echad Bashana, you sin for one day, Ma Lava Kasuv Ki Avar Kol Shana Kula. And therefore, for every one day that the spy sinned, they were punished with 1 year in the Midbar. So that's a scary thought, but on the positive, you basically have it both ways. Now, if you look at the bottom Rashi over here, when he says he left for 3 months to go to work, he would be in Shiv for one day, says Rashi, he would go for 3 months from his house to Beis HaMedrash. He would leave, says Rashi, but no semi beso achar haPesach. He would leave the day after Pesach. He would learn one day when he got there. He would come home to appease and to make his wife happy by Sukkot time. So let's put dates to these months, okay? So what's the day after Pesach? Day after Pesach is the 23rd of Nisan. Right? What's 3 months after that? Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. So let's assume this guy got to his destination on the 23rd of Tammuz. He learns for one day. 24th of Tammuz, he begins to return. Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei. That would mean he'd return on the 24th of Tishrei. Sukkot is over.
Tammuz, Av, Elul.
No. Tammuz to Av. Av to Elul. Elul to Tishrei. 3 months. So, how could Rashi, the numbers seem to be off. Rashi's telling us, he left after Pesach, then 3 months, well he traveled a 3 month journey, learned one day, travels back, and he's there enough time to see his wife before Sukkot. So, the Marsha says, simple answer, he says that's why the Gemara says, Rogil, Tavi Azla Tarsi Yarchi Barucha. It took him about 3 months to get a place. Right? First of all, you could say, sometimes it takes you quicker to get home. Especially back then, you knew the road a little better. But also, again, depending on the traffic, depending on the season, it could have been that maybe now that you're more into the summer season, the roads weren't as difficult. You could say that. That's one explanation. The other kasha they ask is, what happened to Shavuos? Rashi seems to be telling us This guy is trying to avoid being away for Yontif. Right? He leaves day after Pesach, so his wife's happy, although he misses the cleanup, but maybe that was intentional. And he comes back, apparently before Sukkot. But he also might have missed Sukkah building over there, but that's, again, I'm not getting into the relationship here. But he missed Shavuos. How did he miss Shavuos? Especially because Rashi seems to be emphasizing that he made sure to get back to be Misameach his wife for Sukkot. So he didn't care about Misameach his wife on Shavuos. So what's Pshat over here? Anyone?
He's also missing Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
No, but there's no mitzvah of being Misameach your wife. There's a mitzvah of Samachta
B'chagecha. He can't be traveling on those days, so it's, taking days away from his travel back.
To right.
He used the Shavuos Pesach instead of Yantar. Shavuos as a Yantar.
What do you mean?
Well, because Shemina Tzeres is instead because it's too cold, so we don't have
some, right.
If you make the correlation back to Pesach.
Interesting.
For Shavuos
you would abstain.
No, but we refer to that, we say there's a mitzvah of Simcha on all three regalim.
But for Shavuos you would abstain from doing something with Nisameach with your wife, if that's where he's, if that idea.
One thing you could possibly say is that isn't the Simcha of a wife subjective? Doesn't the Gemara, I think we saw this earlier, but we say this many times in Shas, that the Simcha of a wife is depending on what she likes. So, we might not like to hear this, but there might be a mitzvah to buy your wife a nice piece of jewelry or a piece of clothing before. That might be a mitzvah d'oraisa even nowadays. Meaning, the way a man is mekayim Simcha, the Gemara says, we don't really have a choice. We don't get sports tickets. Right? We get meat. Meat's for us. And the kids get nuts or nowadays candy. But women, back then it was big day tzivonim, it was colored garments. Now it might be jewelry or other types of clothing. So maybe he just had a really big tzaddikus of a wife. And for her, the greatest simcha is the fact that her husband is away, or that gets to support her or him, and gets to learn even for one day. You could say that. Alternatively, this might get into a discussion we had 2 weeks ago. If you remember, we spoke about the concept of an onis b'yomacharon, of creating a situation that I'm then not going to be able to fulfill a mitzvah. Can I go on vacation to a place with no minyan? Right, well, the Gemara says, if I'm within a certain place, I have to go after it, but now I'm away. Yeah, but I did that on purpose. So some want to suggest, maybe he tried his best, but there's no mitzvah of Simcha B'Regel if I'm not near my wife. But he did it on purpose. Okay. But when it comes to, there's no mitzvah to plan ahead, essentially, according to one opinion. Right? He left when he left, Motzei Pesach. He was entitled to do that. Shavuos comes, he's nowhere near his wife. He can't do it. He's like, he's onis. He's putter. Yeah, that gets it back into that discussion we had about, is that really so viable to say? Even those opinions that say that, many others reject that and say you can't bring a proof from here, or that's not really how we paskin. But that's all centered around that Rashi about essentially the months and how you calculate them with respect to this one day for every 3 months, Rabbi.
I have the answer. He brought his wife money. That's the ultimate simcha.
Oh, the ultimate simcha. But on Shavuos, he sent it to her?
No, he took us in Pesach.
What about Shavuos, though?
He brought us so much, it made up for not being home.
Okay. So now we are getting back into Maseches Chagiga officially. Now we're talking about what we said in the Mishnah. We've got to remember what's said in the Mishnah. We're talking about a katan, but Machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to at what age a katan is chayv in chinuch to be olal regel. Beis Shammai said when he's old enough to sit on his father's shoulders, and Beis Hillel said when he's old enough to hold his father's hand and walk. Okay? So the Gemara over here on the bottom says, Maskev lo Reb Zeira. Now going on to Vav Amud Aleph. Ad hocha, man asye. It's a very interesting question. The Mishnah had described that, let's say you talk about walking, or even on the shoulders, right? We said, as long as he can be on the shoulders or walk, from Yushalayim to Harabais. What if he lives in Bavel? Meaning, why are we making the qualification for a child to either walk or be carried from Yushalayim to Harabayis? Or Rashi on the Mishnah actually said from Yushalayim to the Azara. But how did he get to Yushalayim in the first place? Right? It's a very basic fundamental question on the Mishnah. So Amar Le Abaye, Ad Hacha, I say, the Mechayve Eime B'Simcha, I say, Eime. The answer is his mother brought him. Well, why is his mother going to Shulayim? We saw in the Mishnah that she's putter from Re'iyah. Women are putter, whether it be the Karban or even Olul Regel. Why is she coming? She's still Chayev in Simcha. Now, yes, we just had a discussion about Simcha can be manifest in other ways, but at least at that time, it sounds like there was an element of Simcha to be Olul Regel, and says Rashi, V'lismok b'chag im bala. At the end of the day, it doesn't really make sense mitzad simcha to have the father and the son be in Yerushalayim the whole Yom Tov. She's at home. The family simcha b'samachta b'chagecha b'yishtecha, but it's really with the family. So the answer is the whole family made the trip to Yerushalayim. At that point, she says, "I'll see you later," or "Meet me back at the hotel after you do what you got to do," and she stops because now she has no further obligation to go further because now all you're doing now is Ali L'Regel or bringing the carbon riyah, which she doesn't have a chiyav on. Now we say, well, if the kid can walk, or if the kid can be carried, then his father will take him the rest of the way to Harabayas or to the Azara.
It's interesting, this is a kid, not necessarily the son.
Okay.
So that means that if the daughter is able to walk, the father then takes the daughter. So the mother doesn't have the chiyav to go on Aliyat Regel, but the daughter does?
I'm not sure. I think this is referring to the son. Because else we would have said Kitana. I think easily, this is, we're talking about a katan here.
Oh, it does say.
So I think katan here refers to only a son. So says the Gemara, Mikan ve'ilech, once the mother drops this kid off at the gates of Yerushalayim, im yachol lalos v'lechos b'yadosh shel av Yerushalayim harabayis, if according to Beis Hillel, he can walk with his father's hand and go to harabayis, chayev, then the kid has to do so. V'lo, and if he can't make the walk, pater. Okay. So, Heshiv Rebbe Tachas Beis Hillel L'divrei Beis Shammai. Remember, Beis Hillel is the one who says that the kid has to be old enough to walk with his father. Beis Shammai is the one who says an even earlier age. We know, obviously, the kid, before he can walk, he can be on his parents' shoulders. Right? You can't put a 2-month-old on your shoulders. Like, it won't work. But you can put a 18-month-old on your shoulders, even if that 18-month-old cannot walk. So now, Beis Hillel, Rebbe is going to ask a question on behalf of Beis Hillel, directed at Beis Shammai. The pasuk says, V'chana lo alsa, Chana didn't go up to Yerushalayim, ki amra. She says, Li'isha, to her husband, Li'ishela, to her husband Eli, ad yigamel hanar, Vavi Yosef, right? Her son was Shmuel. She says, let me wait till he's older, till he's fully weaned, and then I'll bring him. And Rashi says, how long is a child fully weaned? 24 months. The Gemara Mishnah actually in Mesachas Ksuvos, which tells us that a mother nurses until 2 years old. Now, if you're looking for shopping for a kula, you might want to know about this because nowadays there's a big question as to a nursing mother fasting on certain days, right? So we're probably not talking about Yom Kippur, but for the other major fast or even minor fast, right? Is nursing an excuse to not fast? So the answer generally is yes, right? The supply of the milk and if the child needs it. So that seems to be a pretty well-accepted kula by most of the fasts. What about when the woman stops nursing? Let's say a woman stops nursing fairly early. So some want to say that according to this opinion that a child is to be nursed for 2 years, that the woman has a status of a minekes until the child reaches the age of 2. Even if she's no longer nursing, which would mean that if you're Haredi and you try to have kids every year, maybe never fast, because your kid never gets to the age of 2 before you have another kid. And if you really have 2 years from the time the child is born to not fast, then you're not really fasting on most minor holidays. Not necessarily a widely accepted kula, but it is a kula that exists, depending on this. Now, I also want to point out, I was just thinking this now, that in that pasuk, right, it says if you read it without the nekudos, it's liisha, but we know there's a mapek hey, liisha, which means ish shalah, which is referring to her husband. This comes up actually once in Bereishis. I once mentioned this to a gabbai because I was sitting there, I forgot which parsha it was, but in Bereishis talks about a husband and wife, and it says liisha with a mapek hey. But I remember I was in shul and the Baal Kori read it liisha, and didn't emphasize the mapek hey. So do we correct the mapek hey? Not. I said to the guy afterwards, over here, it's an egregious error. Because Isha means woman, Isha means her husband. Right? The Mapekei over here completely changes the meaning of the word. That's a very correctable, that has to be corrected. Sometimes it's hard to tell if he really did the Mapekei, but if you know that a Bal Kore didn't do the Mapekei where he should have, especially if it's Isha, when it has to, and he just says Isha, that needs to be corrected. So I was just thinking about that, because over here Isha means her husband, it doesn't mean a woman. Okay, so Gemara says, so what's the proof over here? So Chana decided that I'm not going to be Ola Regel, I'm not going to take my son Shmuel up to Yerushalayim, because he's not two yet. He's not weaned yet. Hold on one second. V'hash Shmuel, the Yachol Lirkav Al Ksev HaShel Aviv Hava. Let's say he's 1.5. A 1.5-year-old can go on his father's shoulders. So he's not two yet, Shkoyach. But according to Beis Shammai, as long as you're able to ride on your father's shoulders, you have to go. So how did Chana exempt Shmuel and say, oh, my son Shmuel, he's not two yet, 1.5.
She had another kid, and therefore she stopped nursing the first
kid. No, so according to Beis Shammai, how is Beis Shammai going to respond to this? That was no excuse. So Amar Leh, Abaye, they changed the Gersha to, Abaye says, responding on behalf of Beis Shammai, U'taymeich, hold on one second. That's the kasha you're asking? I have a different kasha on this pasuk. Tikshei lecha Chana gufa. Chana herself. Milo mechayva besimcha. I mean, you're asking the question on how did she get Shmuel, the 1.5-year-old, out of doing this if he could ride on his father's shoulders. But what about Chana herself? Why is she staying home? She doesn't live in Yerushalayim. Shouldn't she, as part of her chiyuv of simcha, make the trip up at least to the gates of Yerushalayim with her husband? And then obviously her child, who she probably wouldn't leave at home by herself. Says the Gemara, Ella, Chana, Mifan Kusa, Yisei Rasa, Chazi Bebe Shmuel. She was a little finicky. She was very nervous. She basically saw something that she didn't want Shmuel to travel. The Chosha Bebe Shmuel, the Chosha D'Archa, right? She didn't want to take the 1.5-year-old on this tough journey in the heat. And so that's why she kept him home. So once she was keeping him home, she had to stay home with him. So that sort of answers both questions. It could be that Shmuel, according to Beis Shammai, did have to go. He was old enough. But Chana held him back for sick reasons. She was nervous he was going to get sick. And that's why she should have went also. But she was staying home with her son. Now, what was this logic here? That Shmuel was going to get sick. So, if you look at Rabbeinu Hananel on the side over here, he says something very interesting. On the left side of the Gemara, if you have the same Gemara I have, he says, Mishum Hachi Chana Nami Petura. So, he says, if Shmuel is sick, then Chana's Pater from going to Yerushalayim. Why? Because we say in Meseches Sukkah, Cholin U'misham Shehen Petura Min Ariyah, or Petura Min Sukkah. We say in Meseches Sukkah that let's say someone's sick. They don't have to go into the Sukkah. Okay? What if I'm the aide? What if I'm the nurse? What if I'm the parent of a child who needs to be cared for? So, black and white in Shulchan Aruch, I'm Pater also. I'm allowed to stay with my child, stay with whoever I'm caring for, assuming you can't have like 5 people caring for the person if they only need 1 person, but if I'm the primary caregiver here, I stay with the child. So Rabbi Hananel says, Chana is using the same logic. Just like over there, the Misham Shehen is Pater, so to here, I'm Mishamesh my son, so I'm Pater. Can anyone argue with that comparison? First of all, she was afraid he was going to get sick. Right? Although, you could argue, so well, let's say by Sukkis, is a mother justified in saying she has a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old who wants to sleep in the Sukkah? She says, it's 20 degrees outside, I'm not letting him sleep out there. Is she justified, or can he say, no, my Rebbe told me in Shiva I have to sleep in the Sukkah? Meaning, he's not sick yet, right. So that's questionable. I think...
Or go to see him.
No, that was the warp of the Torah that warmed us. That was different. It sounds like it says Chusha D'Orcha. It sounds like he's going to get sick on the journey. Not sure if it's a year and a half, let's say.
Yeah, but didn't she have...
No. Because he was old enough to be riding on his father's shoulders. So, interestingly, there's a footnote in the Rabbeinu Hananel over here, and he writes, in the footnote, I don't know who wrote the footnote, he says, The Gemara lo matzinu zeh rak gabei sukkah. It says, the Rebbe Hanan, to be taken literally, Rebbe Hanan says, chol and mosham shein are pater from re'iyah. It says, there's no Gemara anywhere in Shas that says that if someone's sick and they can't be olel regel, someone watching them also have to do olel regel. And by the way, the logic makes sense, because what's the reason why mishamish of a chol is pater from sukkah? By sukkah, we always have the general rule of teshu ke'in taduru, which means you live in the sukkah or you dwell in the sukkah like you would live in your house. So here, if I need to care for this person, I would go wherever this person goes. So if that's outside the sukkah, that's where I go. The same way if this person was in the hospital, I would leave my house and go to the hospital. That concept doesn't apply to olel regel. And therefore, they say maybe they have a different girsa over here. Maybe what it means in the Gemara is it's not that chana the chashav el Shmuel, it's the amra. It's that she said to herself, but it was incorrect. He says, "Rotsa lomar the chana svarakin bedaita that I put from here," but it's not true. Meaning, chana made that connection herself in her own mind. That okay, you know, I know the halacha by sukkah. I don't want my son to get sick. Maybe he is sick, or maybe I'm assuming since he's going to get sick, I can stay home with him. And I know, just like by sukkah, the mishamish stays home, so too I can stay home. That was her own logic, but that's not a logic that we've seen in the Gemara before. So that justification is not necessarily a halachic justification. It's just saying, practically, why she didn't go. Which is very interesting, because it comes out that she was doing the wrong thing. Then how is that really a proof to Beis Shammai? If anything, that you still have a question as to...
She had other motives, though. No, she was gonna, once she brought him up, he wasn't coming back.
Right. But it's very clear, at least from the Gemara, her intentions.
Her intentions.
It says she was chashav Beis Shmuel l'chushad d'archa. So within that line of explanation...
You watch it to hold anything back.
Right.
It was only two, though.
Okay.
As soon as he was weaned, he was coming back. If he was weaned by two, he was obligated to bring him.
He's not coming back.
No, he was, that was the promise.
He was saying
he was going to Eilat.
He wasn't coming back.
Right. Okay, so continuing. By Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon asked the following question. Katan chiger l'divrei Beis Shammai v'sumo l'divrei shnehem mahu. So, very interesting question over here. A chiger is a kid who can't walk, right? Because he's a cripple. Broken leg, let's say. So, this question would only make sense according to Beis Shammai. Why? According to Beis Hillel, where the whole qualification for a child being able to go is walking. So, clearly a cripple would not be chayev in chinuch. Clearly. But Beis Shammai, it's all about being able to, a cripple could still go on his father's shoulders. So, whereas a katan chiger, right, you have a five-year-old who's a chiger, so he can ride on his father's shoulders, but he's a cripple, or a katan suma, a five-year-old kid who's lolenu blind, l'divrishneim, and that would be a question for the Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, mahu, is such a child, again, a cripple according to Beis Shammai, who can still ride on his father's shoulders, and a suma katan, according to both of them, mahu. Now, we're asking this question because we know from the Gemara that a suma and a chiger adult are pater. Right? If you're 20 years old and you're a chiger or a suma, you don't go up. So what about a katan? So what's this question? So says the Gemara, Hichidami. What type of chiger and suma are we talking about here? Ilema b'chiger she'enu yochol l'spasheh, v'suma she'enu yochol l'spateach. If you're talking about a five-year-old who's blind for life, or he's crippled for life, meaning there's no chance, b'derech hateva, of him getting better. Doctors say, it's impossible, according to nature, for him to get better. Then, hashta gadol pater, if such a gadol, a suma, a chiger, if he's pater, katan mibai, of course. And now, what's the logic there? The logic there, Rashi points out, is, isn't the whole point of chinuch, so that when you get older,
you'll know
what to do. But this kid's going to be blind forever, a chiger forever. When he gets older, he's never going to go.
Right.
So why does he need to know now what he's never going to have to do?
He might have children of his own, but he might have to teach them.
I can't really teach them. So lo tzricha bechiger sheyachol es pashet besuma sheyachol es pashet. We're talking about a five-year-old child who's blind and he's some deformity or something in his leg that he'll get better. Interestingly, Rashi and Tosos both point out when we say getting better here, it means getting better before his bar mitzvah. I found this interesting because let's say doctors say this is going to take 10 years to heal. Or I think if you do this treatment, in 10 years you'll be able to see again.
So who would get that? He's 15. So is there a chiyuv chinuch there or not? Rashi and Tosfos both seem to say that we have a fine line. It's 13 or bust. At your bar mitzvah, I guess it's like a good bar mitzvah, Joshua, right? You tell the kid, this is your moment, right? If you are able-bodied now, that carries you. And if you're not, then there wouldn't even be a chiyuv chinuch. So that's what Rashi and Tosfos seem to say. So we're talking about a kid who let's say he's a 5-year-old kid, he's blind or crippled, he'll get better before he turns 13. And we want to know, is such a kid chayiv in chinuch? Now, what's the reason to say yes? What's the reason to say no? So Tosos provides both sides. On the one hand, you'll say, well, chinuch should for sure be yes. Because since doctors say there's a good chance by the time he's bar mitzvah, he'll be better, he's got to know what to do. So even though now he's a cripple or now he's blind, take him up, train him, show him, we're going to walk this amount of distance, this is what we do. Or if he's crippled, you'll carry him around, because when he's 14, 15, fresh of his life, he's going to be doing that. What's the side to say not? Side to say not is that perhaps when we analyze whether a katan is chayv in chinuch, we superimpose what would a gadol be in his position right now. Meaning, pretend this 5-year-old was really a 13-year-old in his current position. Would he be chayev or would he be pater? So he's a 5-year-old chigir. He's a 5-year-old suma. If pretend he was 13, would he be chayev? No, because he's a chigir, because he's a suma. Therefore, even now, he's pater. So we don't view it as training to what he will be. It's rather, perhaps, the other side is we superimpose godless on him now, and if he wouldn't meet that test, he's pater even now. Not as logical, but you could see how one could hear that side. So says the Gemara, Amar Abaye, actually we're going to go with that second side. Kol hecha de gadol mechayev midoraisa, if a gadol in his position would be chayev midoraisa, then that kata nami mechanchin le midorabanan. However, kol hecha de gadol pata midoraisa, meaning if a gadol would be a chiger, and a gadol is a suma, he's not chayev, then midorabanan kata nami pater. Since this katan is a chiger, is a suma right now, and gedolim that are chigers and suma are pater, he has no chiyuv chinuch because his chiyuv chinuch is generated from what a gadol would be.
What is the rule of a gadol who's a chiger or suma that is going to get better?
He's chayiv.
Why can we say that?
Like I said, because we have the bar mitzvah. This bar mitzvah is a cutoff. According to Rashi and Tosos, right? You're right. We spoke about it on the first amud, right? You had a chiger that on the first day of Yontif had a broken leg. Second day he was healed. So clearly, when it comes to anyone above bar mitzvah, you break your leg, you become temporarily blind. When you get better, you're chayiv again. But for some reason, by a katan, we analyze. According to one side, the bar mitzvah, but that's not how we paskin. It sounds like we paskin that whatever you are as a katan, whatever your condition is, we ask the one simple question. Your condition. If a gadol had that condition, would the gadol be chayev? If the answer is no, you're not chayev right now. Now, again, it seems a little illogical because as the doctor said, you're going to get better when you're 12 or 13, you're going to need to know these skills. And nevertheless, we impose whatever a gadol would be on you, it sounds like the chiyuv of chinuch is not necessarily what we thought. It's not all about training. It might be about the fact that you possess some gadol, you're growing to become a gadol.
But you're imposing that even if he's going to be not blind, even if he's going to be able to see when he's 15.
Correct. You know, it's a very interesting conclusion of the Gemara, and it's one that's a little bit of a chumrah. If you say it's going to basically be machmir that a lot of children will not have a chiyuv of chinuch to do things when they're in positions that they'll get out of. If right. Those positions that they're in right now, a gadol would be put in those positions. Interesting.
Is that a kula?
It could be a kula. Also, I mean, it depends how you look at it.
Right. Depends how you look at it.
No, I mean, chumrah is taking away an opportunity to do a mitzvah. That's a
chumrah. Depends how you look at it.
Okay, so now we're going to get to the end of the Mishnah. The end of the Mishnah, if you remember, spoke about how much money one has to pay for the two main karbanos that we bring on Yontif. Right, what was the number? First karban we bring is an olas re'iyah. That's a karban re'iyah that's an ola. An ola is something that's completely sacrificed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then we have a karban chagiga, which is a shlamim, which we bring when we're chogig on the regel, and that's something that we get to eat as well. So if you remember the Mishnah, Beishamai had said, the karban re'iyah, you have to spend two kesef, and the Chagiga only one. Beis Hillel the opposite. Beis Hillel said the Chagiga two and the Re'iyah one. Now before we get into the Gemara, we have to understand the assumption the Gemara is going to make here is that the more you spend on something, the more important it is. Which is a pretty valid assumption. So if an opinion is going to say that we spend more on the Re'iyah, it's because they, for some reason, think that there's more importance to the carbon Re'iyah, or and vice versa. Okay, so says the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Beishamli Omrim Re'iyah Shtei Kesef Chagiga Ma Kesef. The Re'iyah, you have to spend more on the Re'iyah than you do on the Chagiga. So that means Beishamli seems to be assuming that the Re'iyah, the carbon Re'iyah, is more important than the carbon Chagiga. Why would that be? Two reasons. Says Beis Shammai, number one, Shari'iyah Ola Kula Legvoa. The carbon Re'iyah is an Ola. It's completely given to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Masha'in came a Chagiga, not the case by Chagiga, which is a Shlamim. So Beis Shammai seems to assume something that's pure, something that's all for God, that's a higher level. That's number one, why you have to spend more money on it. The Ode, Matsidu Ba'atzeres, we find on Shavuos, Shariva Vahena Kasuv Ba'olos, Yosem Yibishlamim. On Shavuos, the Psukim, when it describes different karbanos, it says, V'yikraftem al-alechem, Shivas kivasim timimim, Upar v'makar echad v'ilim shnayim. All those karbanos are Ol Hashem. So you have 7 and 2 and 1, you have like about 10 karbanos. And yet, when it talks about Shlamim, it says, Ushnei kivasim, 2 sheep. So, I ask you, which one's more important? If God tells you to bring 2 sheep, or 7 oxen and 2... the one that he's telling you to give more importance, he tells you to bring more of. Those are Beis Shammai's 2 explanations as to why the carbon Re'iyah should cost more than the carbon Chagiga. Beis Hillel Omrim, HaRe'iyah Ma'a Kesef, the Chagiga Shtei Kesef, the Chagiga, carbon Chagiga costs more. You have to spend more than the carbon Re'iyah. So why is Chagiga more important? 2 reasons. Number one, SheChagiga Yishna Lefnei HaDibor. Apparently, God instructed the Jewish people to bring a Karban Chagiga before Matan Torah. Right? And why is that given Chashivos? Because the fact that God couldn't wait. Right? We had the Torah, which told us almost everything we need to know. The fact that God had to preempt that with a Karban Chagiga shows how much God values a Karban Chagiga. It's not the Karban Pesach. We'll see what it's referring to. Karban Pesach is not, that's not what that's referring to. Masha'in Kain, the Re'iyah, Beis Hillel seems to assume the carbon Re'iyah was only brought post Matan Torah. The Ode, a second reason why Beis Hillel says that the carbon Chagigah should cost more money and it's more important, because Matzidu b'Nesiim, Shariba b'Hanakasa b'Shlamim, Yosir mi'olos. The Nesiim, the princes, the heads of tribes, when it came to the inauguration of the Mizbeach, they in fact brought more Shlamim than Olos. So
it's
you
not,
see.
It's not after Matan Torah? The Mishkan?
No, the Mizbeach. The Mishkan.
Yeah, it was after Matan Torah, then Cheder Egel.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with?
I thought you said it in more Cheshivish because it was given before Matan Torah.
That was one reason.
Yeah.
And the second, okay, the second reason is because we find when the Nesim were bringing Karbanos, they brought more Shlom than Olos. So obviously we're going to have to ask, what does Beis Shammai do with Beis Hillel's reasons? And how does Beis Hillel respond to Beis Shammai's reasons? So Beis Hillel, my time alo amri ki Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai said, Re'i is more important because number one, we find that it's all Tashem. And number two, on Shavuos they brought more Olos. How does Beis Hillel respond to that? So Dika amart, Re'i adifa, de ola kul legvoa. The fact that we say an Ola is better because it's all Tashem, adrava chayiga adifa de espesh de achilos. Who says all Hashem is better? Maybe me and Hashem sharing something. Maybe that's better. That we'll learn from Shavuos. They brought more Olos than Shlom by Shavuos. But Donim Karban Yachid Me Karban Yachid. We're trying to understand how much an Olas Re'iyah should cost. So I'm not gonna learn that out from Atzeres, which were Karbanos Tzibor. I'd rather learn that out from Nesiim. Right, which are individual karbanos. So they ain't done in karban yachid, make karban tzibor. Right, when we're choosing to learn something, we want to make a parallel that they're both individual karbanos. And since by shavuos they were karban tzibors, you can't bring a proof to that. Ubi sham my time alamer kibes hillel. Beis Hillel said chagig is more important for 2 reasons. Number one,
What are the two reasons? Number one, because it was said before Matan Torah. They brought it before Matan Torah. And number two, the Nesiim brought more Shlomim than Olos. So Didka, Marchi Gadif Adishnal Pena Dibor, that which you said Chagiga is more important because it was brought before Matan Torah, says Vishamai Ri'ya Nami Shnal Pena Dibor. I'll argue with you. I say, the Karban Ri'i, Olos Ri'ya, was also brought before Matan Torah. Didka, Marchi Gadif Minisiim, oh, the Nesiim brought more Shlomim than Olos. Dunin davar hanoig ledoros, midavar hanoig ledoros. The Nesiim was a one-time thing. An inauguration, that was the only time the Nesiim were ever going to bring karbanos like that. So when we're trying to bring a comparison for the Re'iyah, for Chagiga, you want to use a comparison from something like Kipsi Atzeres, something like Shavuos, that will always be the case. Being dunin davar hanoig ledoros, which is the Olas Re'iyah, midavar she'in hanoig ledoros, which is the karbanos by the Nesiim. So now we see there was a machlokes about whether or not a korban olas re'iya was brought pre-Matan Torah. So, ubeis hillel, ma'ishna chagiga deshna fein adibor, beis hillel was of the opinion that only chagiga was brought Matan Torah. What's the proof? Because the pasuk says, when they were in the midbar, v'yizbichu zvachim shlomim. In the midbar, not korban zvach, in the midbar they brought shlomim. That shows you they brought chagiga pre-Matan Torah. So, bishami would respond, v're'iya nami. By the Olas Re'iyah also, that's that very same pasuk. Continue reading the pasuk. It says, "Haksiv vayalu Olos." They sacrificed Shlomim in the midbar, and they also brought Olos. So you see in the midbar pre Matan Torah, they brought Karban Chagiga, and they also brought Karban Re'iyah. How's Beis Hillel going to respond to that? How could Beis Hillel possibly say that only Chagiga was pre Matan Torah, when in the very same pasuk it describes that in the midbar they brought chagigos and they brought olos? So Beis Hillel responds, "Ksavri Beis Hillel, that olos sheikribu yisrael b'midbar was an olos tamid hava." Right? Olos is a generic term. There's more than one type of ola. We've been referring to the olos re'iyah, the ola that's brought on yontif as a carbon re'iyah. There's another type of ola, olos tamid, the ola that was brought in the Beis Hamikdash each and every day. So says Beis Hillel, you know what the type of ola they brought in the midbar was? It was an olas tamid. It was an ola that they brought every single day. And Beis Shammai clearly argues on that. And Savri, ola shekriv yisrael b'midbar, olas re'iyah hava. It was an olas re'iyah. Tamar Abaye, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Elazar, those three opinions, chulu sviruluhu, ola shekriv yisrael b'midbar, was an olas re'iyah hava. So we're going to isolate camps. You have three individuals, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shmuel. They all hold that when the Pasuk says the Jews in the Midbar brought an Ola, it was talking about an Olas Re'iyah. Beis Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yosef Glili, they all hold Kul Svir Luhu, Ola Shekir Yisrael B'Midbar was an Olas Tamid Havai. So where do you get that from? So Beis Shammai had the Amran. Beis Shammai said, well, we proved it, because he says from the Pasuk of Olos, that refers to an Olas Re'iyah. What about Rabbi Yishmuel? Because in Hani Rabbi Yishmuel Omar, Kolos Nemru B'Sinai. At Har Sinai, we weren't given everything. We were given general rules. For example, Rashi tells us, we were told to sacrifice karbanos, but we weren't told the details. How do I skin an animal? How do I dissect the animal? Those details were not told, Upratos B'Ol Moed. The details were told later on at Ol Moed. Rabbi Akiva Omer argues, and that said, Kolos Upratos Nemru B'Sinai. Everything was said at Har Sinai. V'nishnu, it was repeated to Moshe at Ohol Moed. V'nishtalshu, and eventually said a third time to the Bnei Yisrael, Ba'arvos Moav. Now, how do you see from there? The Rabbi Shmuel holds that the Ola that was brought in the Midbar was an Olas Re'iyah, and not an Olas Tamid. Because the Gemara says, V'yisach v'yayitach Ola shekir v'yisrael b'midbar, Olas Tamid hava. If the Ola in the Midbar wasn't Olas Tamid, that doesn't work with Rabbi Shmuel. Because remember, Rabbi Shmuel says, we didn't get the details until later. So, mi kemide, could it really be, d'me'ikara lo ba'i hefshet v'nituach, ulubesof ba'i hefshet v'nituach? Because if the olas tamid, if the olas they brought in the midbar, was an olas tamid, well, in the midbar, they never got the details of the law yet. That means you're bringing the olas tamid, but you don't know how to skin it. You don't know how to dissect it. So according to that, you're going to bring the olas tamid without skinning it or dissecting it. Then you got the details in Ohel Moed, and then all of a sudden you skin it, dissect it. Like, how could it be you have the same karbon, and then a week apart, depending on if you learned the laws or didn't learn the laws, these karbons were brought differently. So it must be, Rabbi Shmuel would hold,
that the oil that they brought in the Midbar was an olas re'iya. Because an olas re'iya was something that they're not commanded on. I mean, the olas tamid would be something that God says, bring the olas tamid. So it has to be brought with all the dikdukim, with all the details. Rashi tells us, when it comes to the olas re'iya, the Jews decided on their own to bring the karbon. So it would not be astonishing that before Matan Torah, before Ol Moed, they brought it the way they wanted to bring it. And then once they got the details, they brought in a better way. So that's the proof, seemingly, that Rishmael holds that it must be the oil they brought in the Midbar was an olas re'iya. And finally, Rabbi Elazar d'Tanya, Rabbi Elazar's opinion, who says olas re'iya is what they brought in the Midbar, because the pasuk says olas tamid ha'asuya b'har Sinai, the olas tamid which was made at Har Sinai. So Rabbi Elazar Omer ma'aseh ha'nemru b'Sinai. The way to perform, the way to bring the olas tamid was set at Sinai, but v'hi atzma lo karva. But the olas tamid itself was never brought in the Midbar. What does the pasuk mean when it says that they brought olas in the Midbar? It must be, it was referring to an olas re'iya. We'll stop here.